Welcome to our radio show, everyone, and good morning. I'm Chuck Anderson. We're coming to you today from the home of Joe Foss in Scottsdale, Arizona, where one of South Dakota's most famous personalities has been living for nearly 30 years, and it's a pleasure to have him on our show. It's rather fitting to be interviewing him in the Phoenix area, site of the 1996 Super Bowl, since he was the driving force behind the creation of the Super Bowl and is the first commissioner of the American Football League. But that is only one of our guest achievements. While serving with the United States Marine Corps during World War II, he became America's top fighter pilot ace, shooting down a confirmed 26 enemy aircraft. He is a Congressional Medal of Honor winner and has been on the cover of Life magazine. He has been a very successful businessman, is an author, lecturer, served as the youngest two-term governor of South Dakota. And I want to right now, Joe Foss, I want to welcome you to the show.
As I always say, I'm happy to be anywhere, anytime. Thank the Lord every day I'm around for one more day.
For millions of Americans, Joe Foss is known as the founder and host of the hugely successful television program, The American Sportsman, which was aired on ABC, and The Outdoorsman with Joe Foss. Some of his guests were Chuck Yeager, Charlton Heston, Baron Hilton, and Roy Rogers. It's our privilege, really, to have this great man from South Dakota on the show today. He's a commissioner, he's a retired general, and is the honorable former governor of the state of South Dakota, Joe Foss. And again, sir, tell all of the people in our radio audience that we're so glad to have you with us.
Yes, sir.
You know, on your book, and by the way, we want to recommend this for reading for the school children, and when I talk to you on the phone, I understand quite a few kids pick you out for a theme or a book report, Joe.
Oh, yes. They use that, and they always use that to get autographs. I get a lot of requests for autographs.
And we just had you autograph the Huron Public Library's copy here that I brought with me to Arizona. It's called A Proud American, the Autobiography of Joe Foss. And I believe it was published in 1992, Joe. And it's still
91 or two.
And it's still around the country, and it's yours in the United States with $22, or in Canada, $27.50. And if you can't afford to buy one, I'm sure that they can go down and check one out at the public library.
Yeah, they're in most of the libraries, but the thing about it is they're just about, in fact, they are, for all practical purposes, sold out on that book. I think the only one that has any copies left happens to be my wife, who wrote the book.
Okay. On the back, I want to just go through some of the accolades, Joe, and maybe you can tell us what these people meant in your life. And let's just start with one by Al Newhart, who's the founder of USA Today. He's chairman of the Freedom Forum. Al says, Joe Foss is a great American hero in every sense, military, political, personal, and family. His autobiography will be an inspiration to all. Al Newhart.
Well, I've known Al Newhart since he was a kid, when he was down at the legislature as a page, and then again, of course, when he owned he and another chap owned the sport magazine or paper in Sioux Falls, which they ended up going broke, and I think because the Argus Leader was too much competition for him. But after he went on with his USA Today stuff, he's come back and that outfit bought the Argus Leader, so now he could start a sport paper there and be pretty safe in Sioux Falls.
Here's what Pete Rozelle says about you, Joe. Joe Foss's life has been embraced at least a half a dozen intriguing careers thus far, and this autobiography covers them all in Joe's colorful and straight-talking language. That's by Pete Rozelle, former commissioner of the National Football League.
Well, Pete and I used to battle it out. We came on as commissioners at the same time, within a matter of a few days apart. He with the National Football League and me with the American Football League. So we were battling away in those days. But as time marched on, we became good friends. And all I can say about Pete is that he did an outstanding job with the National Football League. And of course, right today, he and his wife are just having a tough time, both fighting, I think, brain cancer. They've just had a terrible time, and he hasn't been feeling well.
We were visiting about Paul Harvey before we went on the air, Joe. Paul Harvey, here's what he says about Joe Foss. No contemporary American has distinguished himself in four separate careers, as has Joe Foss. Military, politics, sports, and one more. And the last is not least. You will read about it in his own words. The book is called A Proud American, and it was written just in time by Paul Harvey. Wow, that's some pretty heavyweight stuff there, Joe.
Well, Paul has been a good friend of mine since way back when I was in the legislature. I was over to his home way back there showing him how to call ducks, using my duck call and coyote call, and he invited the neighbors to all come over, and Angel, his wife, came down to hear it, and so we spent a few hours together. And since that time, off and on, we've gotten together, and he's invited me many times to go fishing with him, which I've never had the opportunity. And I must say that my wife had Paul and Angel over to our house here one time, and actually I had to leave after a couple hours. When I came back, they were still there working on some house plans, and Paul has since built the house here that they were planning that day on the kitchen table.
When I think of Paul Harvey, occasionally I'll have the chance to speak to some high school students, Joe, and he's the one man in all of America that I really recommend. I say, kids, I'll tell you, if you listen to Paul Harvey, you will learn how to speak the King's English. He's a great speaker.
Yes, he's very easy to understand. You never have to guess twice as to what he has said.
General J.H. Jimmy Doolittle, man, what a man out of the history of the United States. He's with the United States Air Force, retired, and here's what he says about Joe Foss. Joe Foss's heroism and leadership have provided inspiration and encouragement to us all. I am particularly pleased that his efforts at Guadalcanal are being remembered. My friend's life reads far better than most fictional heroes. Wow, Jimmy Doolittle. I remember in the book he plays a role in there.
Well, we've been dear friends right up until he passed on from this earth. Jimmy hunted with us, with my wife and myself, and I had hunted with him from years back. He was a great hunter, great outdoorsman. In fact, the first show that we did on the American Sportsman, which we filmed in South Dakota, but that wasn't the first one that ran, however, but it was the idea for the American Sportsman for ABC came out of all of the big hunt that I had in the Joe Foss pheasant hunt up in the Howard, South Dakota area. And we had 200-300 people there, and among which was Jimmy Doolittle and Kurt LeMay and a lot of those people from the military and several of the movie actors of that day, and a lot of industrialists. And Tom Moore, who was then vice president of the American Broadcasting Company, said, wouldn't it be great if we could do something like this and have it on TV? And I said, that should be very simple. You're a big dog with ABC, and why don't you just do it? And so he asked, we were driving down the road, and he asked the men that were riding with us in the car, who happened to be industrialists from around the country, the big man from Sears Roebuck, and a big man from Questor's conglomerate, and a fishing tackle outfit, and one other chap. and asked them if they'd be interested in sponsoring such a show, and they all agreed that if there was a show like that, they would become sponsor. And that's exactly what happened. Well, 3 days later, Tom asked me if I'd be interested in being the host, and I said I sure would. You know, it'd be great to get paid for doing something I enjoy.
Yeah.
And that's how the American Sportsman got started, in a cornfield in South Dakota up by Howard.
Jack Kemp is a name we're all familiar with. Jack Kemp says, quote, "My old friend and former AFL commissioner Joe Foss is a genuine American hero. His book provides an inspiring look into the life and achievements of one of our nation's greatest patriots and fighters for freedom, Jack Kemp."
Well, I've known Jack Kemp ever since the football days, when he was just a young kid. I sold him for $100. He had a broken finger, and Sid Gilman was hiding him out over with the Los Angeles Chargers, which later became the San Diego Chargers. And, of course, that was illegal. He had one man extra on the squad, and the penalty for that was you had to forfeit the player, and the player was Jackie. And so I put him on the block, and three teams claimed him, the Broncos and Kansas City, which at that time were the Dallas Texans, and the Buffalo Bills. And, of course, the outfit that was so sad as far as quarterback talent was concerned were the Buffalo Bills. So I told the Bills, give me $100 and you get Kemp. Now, Kemp was just here. For the Super Bowl, and we spent, my wife and I know he and his wife very well, and we spent a lot of time with him, and of course we're both trying to encourage him to get involved in the race for president, and as yet, you know, he hasn't, but we maintain that he would be the equalizer candidate that could really go in there and take this baby away and beat the present president going away.
You sold Jack Kemp for $100.
Right. And then I really got to know him because he was head of the Players Union, see? And I had a lot of dealing with him, and he was a very reasonable man. And I knew that he was going to go places in politics at that time. And, of course, you have to be good to get elected up where he did in a strong Democratic district as a Republican. That's the kind of appeal that Jack Kemp has.
We're going to be back in 1 minute. Our guest is the Honorable Joe Foss, former governor of the state of South Dakota, retired general, retired commissioner of the American Football League, and many other things of which
you're
going to be.
Like I'm tired with you getting all those tired.
We're going to be right back. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. My guest for the hour is Joe Foss. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Great to be here. Great to be anywhere.
I was noticing some of the statements that have been written about you over the years. Here's one from Baron Hilton, chairman and president of the Hilton Hotels Corporation. And Mr. Hilton says, "Whether dodging bullets in the sky or political arrows on earth, Joe Foss has pushed the envelope during an extraordinary, exciting life. He and Didi have turned out a larger-than-life story about a larger-than-life guy." Those are some pretty heavy words, Joe.
Well, Baron, of course, is prejudiced because we know him very well. There again, he was one of the original eight that formed the American Football League, and he was just a young, hard-working guy at that time. And we got off to a good start. I liked him, he liked me, and he was in there all the time, dedicated a lot of time to getting the league off the ground. He started out, see, with the Los Angeles Chargers, and we didn't draw flies up in Los Angeles. In fact, I shook hands with everybody in the stands. That's how many people weren't there. And it was just a laugher. So when we moved away to San Diego after 1 year in L.A., I don't recall of anyone that ever contacted us to say goodbye, and there was a line or two in the paper that we'd gone, and that's how they thought of the American Football League at the time, you know. They thought we were going to spin in and that Baron Hilton was wasting his money.
You were that guy with that Western cowboy hat.
Yep, I'm the guy with the cowboy hat there.
I'm kind of curious how this gentleman fits into your life, and Regis Philbin. He says, "Who says there are no more heroes? Joe Foss makes up for all those who have fallen. A remarkable life for this proud American, Regis Philbin."
Well, as a matter of fact, I was on Regis Philbin. Philbin had a little dinky radio commentary in San Diego. And I was on that show, and he impressed me. So I asked him what he intended to do, if he was going to, thought he could move up the line or what. Yeah, he said, "I'd really appreciate some help from somebody." And I said, "Well, I got just the guy that's one of my owners that can give you a push. I'll introduce you to him, and maybe you could do an interview with him." And that man is Sonny Werblin, the managing director of the New York Jets, the old Titans that Harry Wismer had initially, after a couple of years went broke and went down the drain. And Werblin and his crew, four other wealthy people, bought the franchise and started the Jets. And of course, I got Sonny to give him a pat on the back, and that would knock you clear into big time, which it did.
There are so many names here. Here's one, Tim Robbie, who says of Joe Foss, quote, "His story is one that will appeal to all proud Americans." And Tim, isn't he from South Dakota too?
Yeah, Jim is the son of Joe Robbie, who was my old classmate from the University of South Dakota and one of my political opponents from time to time, but we were still good friends. And I was the one, of course, that got him into pro football with the Miami Dolphins. But Jim, I've known him ever since. He's a little kid running around picking his nose. And he's just a real nice young man coming up. So he always thought well of me, and I've conducted myself in such a way, wouldn't have any other reason to not.
Here's a man that is in your book, and it's kind of interesting how the two of you met. I enjoyed that part very much. Here's a quote from Richard Nixon. "As America's finest fighter pilot in World War II, a superb governor of South Dakota, and a successful businessman, Joe Foss has become one of America's most admired individuals." That's unquote by Richard Nixon. How'd you first meet him?
I met him in the South Pacific. He was a Navy lieutenant, and I was having trouble getting my men transportation out of combat. And so I stirred around to see a lot of different people, and I ended up going to see this man, Nixon, that they said had something to do with it.
Guy that could get stuff done.
Well, the thing about it, that day I ran into him, it was right after the rain and the jungle was just steaming. And I came to this place where there were Quonset huts and only one single individual walking down the boardwalk there. And as I recall, his hat was too big and his shirt was too big and his trousers looked too big. But he had the rank of senior lieutenant, Navy, U.S. Navy, so I ran up to this guy and said, he says, "What can I do for you, sir?" And I said, "I'm looking for a guy named Lieutenant Nixon." He said, "I am Lieutenant Nixon." He took a second look at me and says, "You're Joe Foss." And I said, "Yes." And of course, everybody out there knew me at the time because they'd, you know, keep track of the score as far as airplanes being knocked down every day, and they had photographs on the bulletin board and so forth, so everybody around that saw me recognized me. And he said, "Well, I wanted to meet you and so forth. What can I do for you?" And I told him, and in 3 days the men were gone. And from that day on, we became good friends. as a result of my acquaintance with another chap named Don Jackson, a Marine, that was from California, and he ran for Congress, was elected, and he and Dick were elected at the same time from different districts, naturally. And when they came to Washington, then they would invite me down to the Chowder and Marching Club meetings. Bill Lovery from South Dakota came in with that same class, and of course Ford, and Hildebrand or whatever his name, a real good congressman from Michigan. And every time there was a dinner or something going on with their class, see, they call it their class when they come to Congress for the first time, I'd get an invitation, and people, that's where they get me mixed up and say Joe Foss was a congressman, because they saw me around there so much. I wasn't even no congressman, but I was just attending their party and dinners and stuff, and I got to know all these people, which came in mighty handy.
There's one quote that I'm looking for. There's so many accolades here by so many famous people. It's just hard to pass up a lot of these,
Joe. I'll tell you a story about those accolades in there. See, the publisher and the senior editor, which was a chap named McCarthy, Paul McCarthy, for what's the name of the publisher, Simon & Schuster, we said, could you get some quotes from people if they'd read what do they call the paper book? You know,
the galley proof.
Yeah, the galley proof. It shows you I didn't have anything to do with it. My wife was doing it, and so my wife says, "Well, yeah, I'll just send it to some of Joe's friends," and. You know, she sent it out, and the amazing thing that everyone that received it read it and sent back a comment. Only two comments were too late to get in there. Bart Starr was one, the former quarterback with Green Bay, who, you know, worked closely with Dee Dee and I here when we were working, trying to get a major league or NFL team. Here in Phoenix, and then of course we're going to build a stadium. We had lined up the people that had the know-how and the money, and then Bart worked with us on that, with these other people that had the cash to do it, and then the other one that didn't get his story in time was Rankin Smith, the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, but all of those others sent it back. And so that just, you know, threw Paul McCarthy in a tizzy when he had all of that stuff. So he called Dee Dee and says, "Well, we'll only be able to use four or five of those quotes. It's just, they're all wonderful, but there's no way we can use all of them." And she says, "You've got to use them all. Because here, these people took enough of their time to read the galley, to go through with this, to write a letter back, and spent that time. And I don't care if you've never done it before, you do it on this book." And by golly, they did. And I never have seen another book. But that shows you how hard Dee Dee had to crank Paul McCarthy's neck to get the job done. But I've heard nothing but good comments about it. And a lot of folks wish they'd get more recommendations on some of these other crappy books they put out.
We're going to visit about just one last guy, and then I want to get into your life, because it is so fascinating, Joe. But in your book, Bob Hope plays kind of an interesting role earlier in your life when you come back, and you're kind of on the Hollywood circuit. But let's save that for the next segment, Joe. We're going to be right back. Our guest is Joe Foss, and you're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. The guest for this morning's show is Joe Foss. Joe, thank you again for being with us, sir.
Great to be here still.
We're at his beautiful, beautiful home in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it's not the type of home that anybody's going to be able to drive by and wave at Joe. I had to go through about two different security gates to get in here. I had to be authorized at the gate. You've got great security here, Joe.
It's the first time we've ever had any security in our lives. And of course, to me, it's a pain in the neck. My wife likes it, but I have no fear of anyone.
I was going to mention what Bob Hope had to say about this wonderful man from South Dakota, a two-time governor and also the youngest governor of the state of South Dakota. How old were you, Joe, when you ran for governor the first time?
Yeah, I didn't think I was that young. I think I took office when I was 39. Since that time, there have been a couple of guys come along that were younger when they came in. One of them was Janklow, and the other one was Governor Mickelson.
And Janklow's back again.
Right. He's older, though, now.
Here's a quote from Bob Hope. Let's see how your lives intertwined. Quote, "It was a real kick to meet Joe Foss, the ace of the South Pacific, back in 1944 when he was a guest on my radio show. I have followed his professional and personal life since that day and believe that virtually everyone would be equally fascinated with his story. The country is indebted to him for his heroics and his dedication." It was Bob Hope.
Well, we met Bob during World War II in 1942 at Guadalcanal. He came on there to entertain the troops. And then after that, off and on, here and there, all through the Pacific, I ran into him, and then back in the States. And when after I finished the Dancing Bear Act, selling war bonds and going to the various...
Now, the Dancing Bear Act, we've heard that term twice, and that really means what, Joe?
Well, getting up before a group and letting them ask any question they want and entertaining them. And that was always easy for me because I just talked about things that I knew about and remembered, and that was it. I didn't have to do much work to remember the things they'd been involved in. And of course, when we came back after the first two tours of duty in 1942 and early 43, well, I took over as the CO of this group at the Marine Air Base at Santa Barbara, California, Goleta, right outside of Santa Barbara. And of course, that was right on track for the Hollywood crew to come up and entertain all these young guys and get them in high blower to go over to the war. And that Bob was very active there. He brought Bing Crosby and Phil Harris and Cooper, the old cowboy actor. And
Gary Cooper?
Yeah, Gary, and you name him.
He's the guy that went, team. Yep.
Yep, he used that.
He had one word, yep.
In nice man, very nice man. They all were. We had no problems with them at all. And then, of course, in return for their coming up there, they had me come to Hollywood. And I gave a lot of talks down there for the various organizations that they belonged to. So it was tough to do because I had to drive down there and be back on our area there. I couldn't be more than 6 hours away because we were on standby, ready to go to war any minute. And that went on for over a year when I came back. So I didn't make too many trips to other than Los Angeles and Hollywood.
Well, one of these guys was able to help you out, wasn't he? One of your Hollywood friends, the guy that played Fred on the Desi Arnaz Lucille Ball show.
Yeah.
You go back to the base and these guys think
Bill
you're
Frawley.
Chumming around.
Yeah, Bill Frawley, he actually, old Fred, as I always called him, said, "Now, if there's ever anything I can do for you, just give me a call." And he gave me his private phone number. So these were all lieutenants that I had. I had 90-some lieutenants there, if you can imagine. Greener than grass, most of them just fresh out of flight training. And they'd ask the dumbest questions about who'd you see in Hollywood and so forth. And I'd seen so many of them. To me, it was just a dull roar. And so why don't you bring some of those beautiful girls up here so we can see them? So I said, yeah, I might do that sometime. So what I did was call old Fred up, Trolley, and say, hey, could you send up some actresses well known and a couple of her friends? I want to teach these lieutenants a lesson or two. And so he says, I'll call you back. And when he called me back, he told me that Jane Russell was coming up and she'd bring a couple. And so I told these three wisest lieutenants that I had that were making the most noise to be ready Saturday. I had a surprise for them. Well, they didn't know what it was. And so on Saturday afternoon, who shows up but Jane and these two friends of hers to pick these three guys up. And their eyes were as big as teacups. And then, of course, they couldn't believe it, nor could all of the rest of the tribe. And they just spent a good day with them. And then after that, I think they came back several times. And one of them really thought he was going to marry Jane. And, of course, the payoff was right after we got overseas. You know, I'd always to entertain the troops. I'd read them screwy stuff out of magazines and stuff. And so here I was. I picked up Time magazine that we finally got. And guess what it said there? That Jane had married Bob Waterfield, the quarterback for the Rams. So I won't give any names because these guys are all around today. See? Their wives might not be that enthusiastic about it. So I just read and said, it looks like you lost your wife-to-be. You married. And the rest of them, they razzed them. They really went after him, razzing him.
He was planning to marry her.
Oh, yeah. He fell in love. But I guess she was just being nice to him. And I don't know about the other two. They didn't marry either one of the ones that they were going with either.
Your dad was quite an entertainer. You mentioned that they sent you around the country to entertain the people and you know, to esprit de corps, the patriotism, because it was a war. We didn't know for sure if we were going to win for some time. But your dad was...
I didn't know we were going to win, I'll guarantee you.
Your dad was an entertainer.
Well, that Pop, the thing about Pop, he could pick up any instrument and play it and was good at it and played in several bands and he played in the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus Band a little bit, played the E-flat alto, or baritone horn, as they later called the thing. He could play a baritone horn, really make it talk. And, of course, he could play the violin at a square dance and never stop. I've still got the old violin here. He'd never stop playing that baby, you know, for the whole evening. Just go and sing and play. And just as a kid, that we didn't have a radio, naturally, and I can hear Dad play and singing a song like Bringing in the Sheaves. And all these various songs he'd play and the fiddle and sing. He had a good time. He just loved life.
And your mother, according to your book, was a gracious lady, came from wonderful parents. Her father was a Yale graduate, a surgeon, comes out into South Dakota to try to get rid of some asthma, but only lasted about a year. Right. But your mother, you said she was quite a character.
Yep.
Mary Lacey?
Yep. Mom was a great lady. She was about as tough as anyone you'd ever meet in your life. Small, but hardworking, could do anything on a farm that there was to do. Could milk 14 head of cows while somebody else was blowing their nose. And she could drive horses, Always, for a lot of times, always had one black eye at least from the wild horses we had. She loved farm work better than she loved domestic work. There's nothing wrong with that. She had farming in those days, you know, you had to really dig to make a go of it, especially off a little farm like we had, 160 acres at that time.
Didn't particularly like the feminine clothes?
No, I mean, they weren't, you know, really made to do a lot of work in. So she'd just dress up in some of my dad's old stuff or anybody else's that would give her something and wear that.
We're going to be back with Joe Foss. It's been enjoyable being here at his home. We're broadcasting to you right now from Scottsdale, Arizona.
You know, speaking of my parents, actually, you know, a lot of kids today, what they need are parents like I had that stabilized us as young, growing up, letting us know the good qualities of life and the work ethic. Especially, and to be honest about things. And I give my parents 100% credit for any success that I've ever had, other than the good Lord guiding me along the way, but as far as a human being was concerned.
We want to mention a couple of those stories about honesty, Joe, that your father instilled in you when you were a young man.
No,
but we're going to be right back. So please stay tuned with us. Our guest is Joe Foss. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. Thanks ever so much for staying with us this morning. We've enjoyed broadcasting to you, and we hope that you'll let us be part of your morning's entertainment. With us, a great guest from the great state of South Dakota, former governor and commissioner, a former commissioner of the American Football League, also a retired general, and a Congressional Medal of Honor winner with his work with the United States Marine Corps as a fighter pilot in the Solomons, the Guadalcanal, and the Southern Pacific. Joe Foss. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's go into your life. It is so interesting. Your dad did instill a sense of honesty and integrity with you. And as mentioning during the break, there's two stories that I could really identify. One, losing your first rifle that you're given, and two, having your car parked for a long time. Tell us about what happened, Joe.
Well, on the rifle.
How old were you?
I don't know. I probably...
About seven?
Six, seven. I went out to shoot these gophers over in what we call the Ball Hill, which was in good view from the farm, any place you'd be on the farm, you could see what was going on over there. And I managed to do pretty good at gophers, as I recall. I got 20-some gophers, which was about average. And Pop would pay a nickel apiece for them. You know, they were digging the place up over there, and we needed every blade of grass to feed the livestock we had without those characters doing away with it. And so right at that time, a power company was putting through the power line right along the side of our farm.
Uh-oh, I see what's going to happen now.
So as long as I was shooting gophers, I noticed this big brown thing up there. In those days, they twisted the wires around sort of a crock-made thing that was on the top of the power poles. And I just all of a sudden was foolish enough to pull up and shoot and break one. Well, after I did it, I knew that I was... I'd been taught never to shoot at any public property or anything else like that. No horse around with a gun at all. Was our instructions were strictly business. Never pointed anything that you didn't intend to shoot. And so even with cap guns, Dad wasn't letting us be pow, 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 pow at one another. We had to shoot them in the air. And so when I came back, my dad says, "Hey, how'd you do?" And oh, I was all enthusiastic. I did real well. And I told him how many gophers I got, and he pops says, "Did you do get anything else?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, I think you did. In fact, I know you did. I saw you." I said, "What's that?" And he said, "That thing you broke there on the power pole
that insulator
is known as an insulator." And he said, "Now, I tell you, you just hand me the gun, and I'll put it away for a year from the day. You can mark it down, and we'll lock it up, and so that you remember real well what to shoot at next time. A year from today, you can get the rifle back. And you tell them I remembered, because it took away that rifle for a year."
What happened about a car, this is something that all young guys, I mean, they're in love with their car, and they drive it to town. By the way, how far was your farm from Sioux Falls?
6 miles. We were 6 miles from Sioux Falls, straight east.
So it was nice to have a car.
Oh, yeah. It made a nice sprint.
But you lost it.
Well, what happened was we were supposed to drive straight down to school. I took the neighbor kids and my brother and sister with me, drop them out at school, and then turn around and come straight home with the two neighbor kids and my brother and sister.
No fooling around.
And no fooling around, unless we had orders to go to Los Ross Lumber Company or IXL Grocery or the Bridgman Russell Creamery or someplace. And this one day, it was a nice summer day, just perfect weather. Duke Corning and a bunch of them said, "Let's go over to Cathedral." And I said, "No, I can't." Come on, it's just a short drive, and we'll be back on time, and let's just drive over there. There's some pretty girls over there that so-and-so knows, and we'll just say hi. So I was dumb enough to take them over there, and we did enjoy everybody we met, and we were a little late getting started back, and I think I was going along pretty good in this old 1928 Whippet. And crossing the intersection of, I believe it's 10th and Spring or 10th and Dakotas, 10th and Spring, a car came from my right and just out, and they went right through, and I just barely bumped his back bumper, and a darn bumper fell off. His bumper fell clear off, and so did mine. I stopped, and this guy, he came out of there like a tiger. Great big man named Brewster. He was a lawyer. His son happens to be a lawyer right now over in San Diego. In fact, he's a judge, and I've heard from him as a result of this book. But he came out and told me who he was. He needed a shave right at the time, and he looked like he's going to eat one of us and chew the other. And he said, "What's your name?" I told him, "Foss." "And what's your telephone number?" 11FJ2. In those days, you didn't have to read a catalog to get your number. And so I says, "But you don't have to call anybody." And the other kids were saying the same thing. We'll fix your bumper. And I suppose it cost a buck and a half to drill out the two bolts and put it on. Excuse me. And so he ended up calling my dad. So when I came home, Pop just said, "Park the car in the north shed," which I did. And then when I came back, I brought the keys back. No, I didn't normally park there. When I came back, he wanted the keys, and I gave him the keys. He says, "This fall when school starts, you can have the keys back again." Now, this was in March, so that meant walking to school and back, and I couldn't accept the ride. And Dad took the other kids, and they'd drive by and wave at me when I'd be almost there. when they... Yeah, when we'd be almost to school, why, Dad and the kids would come by and wave at me. But I never did violate accepting a ride because I knew it wouldn't be good for the home team.
And of course, a hard way to learn a lesson.
Yeah, and then it made it bad during the summer when I wanted to go play ball. I'd have to ride the horse and didn't have a saddle. And, you know, you play ball till dark and then had to ride back in the dark. And so, but when fall came, I got the car back.
What sort of sports were you in, Joe?
What?
What kind of sports and activities?
Milking cows. My dad thought milking cows was better for me than any other sport, but I liked to play baseball. And but I see, I couldn't in high school go out for sports because I had to get home and work on the farm. And as I say, Dad thought it was just better that we did that, and we did it.
Then your dad died when you were about 18, and being the oldest of the family, you had to start running the farm.
Dad was killed when I was a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. So in the spring of 1933. So coming back from the farm at night, the power line blew down, and he ran into it and was electrocuted, and I found him in the road. And of course, that's, as I always say, was the start of my economic training, running the farm, supporting Mom and Sis and the younger brother and sister, and the mortgage on the farm. But I stayed there, 33, 4, 5, and 6, till the mortgage was paid off. And then I turned it over to my brother and went on my way. I wanted a college education.
And this is going to be a great opportunity for us to end with our part one on the life and the story of Joe Foss. It's an interesting story next week, folks, as we'll get into how he goes on and tries to get into Augustana University. And they have a little visit with him, say, Joe, maybe you're not college material. You ought to go back to the farm. But perseverance pays off. He does a lot of hard work. He thinks he's going to become a professional boxer and gets the tar wailed out of him by a guy from Lake Preston, which we'll talk about. Goes through the University of South Dakota, earns his degree in business, and learned about economics. Went into the United States Marine Corps, and the rest is absolute history. The Congressional Honor of Winner, the two-term governor of the state of South Dakota, going on, became the commissioner of the new American League football. Joe, I'm looking forward so much for next week's part two. And thanks for being with us, Joe.
You're welcome.
And until next week, we'll be looking forward to having you back on our same station at the same time. This is Chuck Anderson saying have a great and successful week, folks. Bye for now.